This is The Big Fight and I'm Maria Shakil. In a startling admission during a public inquiry, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau admitted that Canada had no hard evidentiary proof to support allegations linking Indian government agents to the killing of Khalistani terrorist Hardeep Singh Nijjar last year. Mr. Trudeau's testimony comes amidst heightened diplomatic tensions between India and Canada, which escalated following these accusations in 2023. The diplomatic fallout between the two countries worsened when India expelled six Canadian diplomats following Mr. Trudeau's allegations. India also recalled its High Commissioner to Canada, Sanjay Kumar Verma, as part of the escalating diplomatic row. Mr. Trudeau accused India of not cooperating with Canada's investigation, while India dismissed the claims as unfounded. India responded with rejections of the accusations, stating that the Canadian government had failed to provide any evidence. In fact, the Ministry of External Affairs in New Delhi said, and I quote, "The responsibility for the damage that this cavalier behavior has caused to India-Canada relations lies with Prime Minister Trudeau alone," unquote. At the heart of the crisis lies the contentious issue of Khalistani separatism and the murky circumstances surrounding Hardeep Singh Nijjar's assassination. India and Canada's relationship has long been fraught with tensions, historical grievances, nuclear proliferation concerns, and competing interests have contributed to the strain. But the key flashpoints are three. First, Khalistani separatism. Canada's perceived tolerance of separatist groups has infuriated India, which views them as a threat to national security. Second, Nijjar assassination. India's allegations of Canadian inaction and potential complicity have been met with denial and counter-accusations. Third, terrorism funding. Canada's failure to curb Khalistan supporter financing has drawn Indian ire. Remember, Canada is home to highest population of Sikhs outside their home state of Punjab. And there have been several demonstrations in recent years which have irked the Indian government. As rift takes form of full-blown diplomatic confrontation, trade and investment have taken a backseat. The rift may have far reaching consequences for Indo-Pacific geopolitics. The question that we ask on the show tonight, will India and Canada finally find common ground, or will the diplomatic rift continue to widen? Can Justin Trudeau separate domestic political considerations with diplomatic bilateral relationships? Joining me on the show is Daniel Boardman, journalist of Canada. We also have Terry Milewski, who's an author, Blood for Blood, 50 Years of the Global Khalistan. Michael Kugelman is the director of South Asia Institute, the Wilson Center. We also have Dr. Tara Kartha, former director of National Security Council Secretariat. And we also have Pinak Chakravarti, former MEA Secretary and Ambassador. But first up, let's bring in Ujjal Dosanjh. He is a former minister of Canada. He's joining me from Vancouver. So thank you so much for speaking to NDTV. Justin Trudeau's testimony of sorts has come amidst heightened diplomatic tension between India and Canada. There have been accusations which have been escalating since 2023. How do you see the fact that finally the Prime Minister of Canada has admitted that Canada doesn't really have enough evidence to allege that Indian government's links to the Khalistani terrorists' killing?
If I remember correctly, what he said was that at the time he spoke in the House of Commons, all he had was intelligence. I don't think anybody has said that they don't have evidence today. I think that that's the distinction. Perhaps more importantly, the fact is that there are four individuals charged with the Nijjar murder. I don't think that we need to be in denial. I mean, we do understand that countries sometimes do dumb things to each other. And there's no question in my mind or the minds of other Canadians that there is some truth to what Mr. Trudeau has said. The fact is that much of that is based on the same kind of evidence and information that was available in Pannu's case. I mean, this intelligence was given by the Americans. So I think the question, more importantly, is, where do we go from here? How do we repair a relationship that was once good after having been weak at one time during the nuclear explosions sometime a couple of decades ago?
Given the tensions that we are seeing and how thorny the relationship are between the two countries, how do you think it will move from here onwards? Who do you think can play that role of repairing the relationship? India is asking some tough questions, and India has actually said that Justin Trudeau's claims are preposterous in nature.
Yeah, no, I mean, the blame has been flowing bilaterally, so there's no question. I think that Canada needs to recognize that the Khalistani business had essentially died down after the 80s and 90s, and it has only become more prominent in Canada during Mr. Trudeau's time because he's surrounded by the Khalistanis. Has been so from the moment he gained the leadership of the Liberal Party, and he's never disowned them. He's never criticized their violent and extremist activities, their hate speech and their violent speech. So in a sense, Mr. Trudeau has been complicit in the rise of Khalistani business in Canada. On the other hand, we also know that Mr. Modi's muscular policy, and the thing about saying we're going to go into your home to kill you, those kinds of utterances don't really lend themselves to a good diplomacy. And therefore, I think the perception of Mr. Modi in Canada is that he is somebody perhaps you will find difficult to do business with. And similarly, Indians, because of his own history, have no trust in Trudeau. So to repair the relationship, I think we got to dial this down. And I think Mr. Trudeau did not need to go into the House of Commons when he did initially. Now he didn't have to call a press conference. The RCMP had already done that for obviously legitimate reasons. They may have some evidence, obviously. But Mr. Trudeau did not have to inject himself into this and send it back into the stratosphere. He did. So in a sense, he is to blame for that. But we need to dial it down. We need to dial it down from India and from Canada. And the leadership needs to figure out how diplomats can come together and deal with it. And if there is blame to go around in terms of murders and extortion and things of that nature, if India has encouraged or has done that, some might say out of frustration because India has been sending all kinds of information to Canada to act on, to send some people back, extradite them. Canada hasn't done that. I mean, that's been happening from Mr. Trudeau Senior's time when Indira Gandhi had asked for extradition of some people. And Canada has never done that. So, in a sense, I think Canada may have some blame, but that's not a reason for transnational murder or transnational crime. And therefore, I think we need to sit down and figure it out. Both sides need to do that. But if nothing changes in the leadership in terms of their attitudes toward each other and how they deal with this situation in some sort of perhaps with low decibels, then I think we may have to look beyond the current leadership in India and current leadership in Canada for our relationship to become normal again.
Ujjal Dosanjh, one view is also that US is backing Canada, and this in a way has emboldened Justin Trudeau.
I don't think the U.S. Has done anything that they wouldn't have done. I mean, U.S. is part of the Five Eyes. They share information. We share information with other four eyes. That's quite normal. That's been going on for decades. So it's nothing out of the ordinary that U.S. has done, except U.S. also has a case that they are now prosecuting. But I think the U.S. dealt with the case somewhat differently. I mean, the president did not stand up in the Oval Office and made a statement. The Secretary of State Blinken didn't say anything. It was some lowly State of Department official who talked about it when the indictment was released. And therefore, I think America, despite the fact that it's a superpower, has dealt with the situation somewhat more diplomatically. I know there is a theory that America has been putting Canada up to it. I don't think so. I mean, they help each other. Five Eyes help each other. That's the norm here in this country. But I think Mr. Trudeau sent it to the stratosphere by his intervention in Parliament and now by his news conference. I think he's done that on his own because he's had some. There is a theory that he's had some of his own political issues to deal with. Therefore, these two things, news conference and the initial intervention in Parliament, they've come in handy for him. He
But
didn't need to do that.
you make an interesting observation, sir, and that brings me to my next question, that Trudeau may have wanted to create a distraction from his domestic issues. But what really explains the situation now onwards, in the sense that there was this perhaps a great degree of hurry on part of Prime Minister Trudeau? Would you agree with that? And what next in terms of when you say dial down? Can there be a potential dialing down at this stage?
Well, I think dialing down, by that I simply mean that the prime minister or the foreign affairs ministers need to kind of stop making commentary on these issues and let the diplomatic channels work on them. That's what I mean by dialing down. It has to be dealt with. I mean, there is a man who's been killed. There are four Indian citizens who are being charged with the crime, and there may be more. And I mean, that's a real issue. The murderers, the killers may have nothing to do with India. They may have had something to do with India in the sense that, of being encouraged to do what they did. And that may all be divulged during the trial. In this country, you don't divulge evidence before you go to trial because it may taint the evidence and make it inadmissible in court.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me bring in the guests now. And this is a question to Michael Kugelman. Michael, the Indo-Canada diplomatic ties have been one of blow colder nature. How do you see these recent developments? And how much of that theory is believable that U.S. is completely backing Justin Trudeau?
Yes, I mean, it's easy to forget, given how bad things are with the relationship now, that this was a quite a robust partnership for quite some time. And if you look over the last 2 years, trade ties between or trade volume between India and Canada has gone up significantly. Canada is a top 20 investor in India. People-to-people ties are very strong, as you well know. You've got very significant Indian diaspora in Canada, large numbers of Indian students in Canadian universities, and there's strategic convergences too between India and Canada over the Indo-Pacific, particularly when it comes to China. But I really do think that this Khalistan issue has really hijacked the relationship in the sense that it's made it difficult to move forward in those other areas just because it's become such a big tension point. And I think that the relationship has maybe not hit rock bottom quite yet, just because Canada's investigation of the Niger killing continues, and that could bring out more allegations that are put out there publicly, and that could then lead to more Indian responses that are very very angry, understandably. So it's in a bad state. To your question about the U.S. And Trudeau, well, Of course. I mean, the US and Canada are allies. They're Five Eyes partners. They're allies. This is what allies do. They stick up for each other. And I think it's not surprising at all that the US has consistently said that Canada's allegations against India should be taken very seriously and that India should cooperate in the investigation. It's quite significant that this week, the U.S. government indicated that it agrees with Canada that India is not cooperating in Canada's investigation. But I don't think that we should overstate this. I think it's quite notable that the U.S. has been very careful with in terms of how it's engaged with India over its own allegations against India for the alleged attempted assassination of Panoon. Unlike Canada, the U.S. has been very restrained in its public messaging about this very sensitive issue. It's let the indictments that have been unsealed do the talking in terms of bringing more information out there. So I think the U.S. is clearly very intent on balancing its alliance with Canada with its strategic partnership with India. And I think to this point, it's done a pretty good job with that.
So, Daniel, you know, here is the Prime Minister of Canada who begins day one of the entire investigation with a lot of escalation. He speaks about it on the floor of the parliament. And on the other hand, the nature of allegations which are coming in from the U.S. are backed by some kind of evidence, and there is a trial which is ongoing. Do you think when it came to Justin Trudeau, there was a great degree of, perhaps pressure coming from within that forced his reaction on the floor of the House?
Well, if we're talking about what are Justin Trudeau's motivations, I mean, he did say in the hearing that initially he thought it was just another gangland killing, but then people within his own caucus of the South Asian community told him that no, India was actually behind it. So by his own admissions, he admits that, you know, read between the lines, the Khalistanis in his caucus really wanted to push this on Niger. I mean, why did Justin Trudeau do this? I think there's a confluence of factors. I mean, were domestic political calculations involved? 100%. 100% the reason why he went out last year publicly by himself in Parliament was to distract from the Chinese foreign interference scandal, which was just being up. And we know that there's 11 traitors, or we suspect 11 compromised members of our Parliament currently sitting right now, and Justin Trudeau won't release those names. So to avoid looking very weak on the foreign interference file, he has then gone DEFCON 1 on India, accused Modi and the whole government and this and that to go to the people and have the media put out the narrative, because, again, he funds the entire media in Canada that's mainstream. So the media now puts out the narrative, oh, Justin Trudeau, is he too tough on foreign interference? Look how tough he is. Justin Trudeau's protecting the country, blah, 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 blah. When the real story is, well, no, he actually sold out the country to the CCP. And, we also have findings now that, I mean, even our security agencies have said that the Khalistan movement was funded by the Pakistani ISI to disrupt India-Canada relationships and do that. So we come back to the point where I said a year ago, I mean, what you have here is you have a story of Pakistani foreign interference being marketed as Indian foreign interference to cover up for Chinese foreign interference. That's kind of where we're at on the original Hardip Singh Najjar thing. Now, there is some basis to all this, right? We've seen the Americans release it. And the analogy I've used is this is a game of Clue, which if you're not familiar with, it's a murder mystery board game that's very famous. You need three things to win the game. You got to get the person, the suspect room, and weapon. Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the candlestick. And if you're going to make an accusation against a sitting ally, you have to have the hard evidence. You have to have Colonel Mustard, conservatory, candlestick. And then Trudeau came out a year late under oath with Colonel Mustard in the conservatory. No candlestick, right? That's the intelligence versus evidence. And now you have India saying, ha ha, you have nothing. And Canada saying, well, no, we do have something. So it's true that in Canada does have something, right? They have two of the three. What they have doesn't meet the threshold needed realistically to start kicking out diplomats of an ally that's positioned within other strategic alliances. So that's what India's mad about, this technicality. Now, to expand the analogy one more point, so we're arguing over the technicality of this game, but the real issue here is you're actually playing this game with your ex-wife, and the argument you're having is not about who wins or loses the game. The argument you're having is about the reason you initially got divorced, which is your wife invited a Khalistani separatist to live in your living room who was shooting at you while you're trying to drink coffee in the morning every day. And that's the real reason you're fighting.
That's actually so this is very well explained to all the youngsters who may be watching my show through all those analogies that you have done here, Daniel. So continue to be with us. We have Terry Milewski is also joining us. Terry, the statement which was issued by the Indian government recently is really sharp and direct. And many would say that it has aggravated the situation further. India says that Trudeau government, it is talking about Trudeau government per se, not really as much as Canadian government, has consciously provided space to violent extremists and terrorists to harass, threaten and intimidate Indian diplomats and community leaders in Canada.
I think, if anything, the Indians are understating it. I think that for 40 years and more, Canada has done an absolutely pathetic job of dealing with the real threat of Palestinian extremism. I'm going back all the way to 1982 when Pierre Trudeau, as was pointed out earlier by Ursula Assange, said no to Indira Gandhi when she asked for the extradition of a guy called Govinda Parmar. Oh, that Parmar, yeah. 3 years later, he blew up Air India and massacred 300 innocent civilians. So there's a very sad record in Canada. That taints this whole discussion. If the Indians are hopping mad about Canada's attitude to the Khalistan menace, then they should be. I, for one, am with them on that. However, I do not believe that we need to go hunting for mysterious hidden motive for Trudeau the Younger to go after India, if I can put it that way, on this file. After all, I mentioned Assange, you just talked to him. Do you know that as a passionate anti-Khalistani, who they tried to kill, by the way, in 1985, lost 84 stitches in his head, that he was elected and re-elected in heavily Sikh ridings for 20 years as a politician. It's not as though you've got to be that only the Khalistanis have political influence. The road to power in Canada is through the Khalistani. I mean, that's just nonsense. You know, there's one or two here or there that get elected once in a while. So that's just to say that the idea that it's domestic political considerations is not going to win him any elections. Okay. By the way, a year ago there was a poll on what Canadians thought about all of this, and people were asked what they thought about the Air India bombing. Didn't know what they were talking about. Didn't know what the pollsters were talking about. That's how much attention they're paying to this file. A couple of other points. First, much has been made in the last few days about this issue. Trudeau has admitted they didn't have proof. That's simply not the case. Again, Mr. Assange pointed out, no, that's not what he said. He said that at the time that this first came out, a year ago, in September, that's when they had intel. Now, he hasn't said they didn't have proof. No, he hasn't. It's just been spun and twisted by his enemies. But finally, I want to make the point that the whole idea that Canada hasn't been
blocked. Okay.
Number one, the evidence is public. We can all read the FBI's indictment. It's on the internet. Read it and tell me there's no evidence. Do that. Number two, if you read it very closely and you look, for example, at paragraph 6 or paragraph 28, you will see the FBI, which is not in the fantasy, quoting the suspect Nikhil Gupta, who is allegedly handling the murder plot against Panoon, tells the hitman that he's hired, it's not just Panoon, but another target of the same plot is Hardeep Singh Najjar in Canada. So it's the same plot. It's one plot with several targets, those two principally. So it's absurd to say, you know, Canada's produced for evidence. The evidence is plain to see. Everyone can read it. And the idea that Trudeau and his officials met at least two or three times before he went public to raise this matter, that Prime Minister Modi knew all about it already before that frosty meeting at the G20 summit. All of this suggests to me that it's absolute bunk that the Indians are saying that there's no evidence. And by the way, just one Final quick point. India can't go on getting away with saying when the same allegations about the same plot targeting the same people is raised by the Canadians, bunk. It's absurd. It's preposterous. When the same allegations made by the Americans, well, a lot bigger geopolitically, oh, well, we're taking that very seriously, and we're setting up a high-level committee, okay, so blah, blah, blah.
There is the point that has been made by Terry here, Dr. Kartha, about India's reaction vis-a-vis the nature of allegations which have come, which is more or less similar from US and from Canada. One may say that here was the Canadian Prime Minister who jumped the gun, while he relying completely on intelligence, while the US allegations, they have taken it in the form of a trial which has begun.
See, like what the former speaker said, the U.S. attitude has been very different. Hmm. They've tackled this in a very mature manner. They're going by the law. They've gone, we know exactly what will happen next. You know, there's a process to it. And that's what is giving us an ability to react to that. Right. So, in fact, a number of these guys have been arrested in the U.S. earlier. Many of these guys who have been linked to these, you know, seek for justice. Couple of them were arrested, I think, in Fremont. You know, they have acted against some of these so-called, I don't want to call them Khalistanis because there's no Khalistan, right? But whatever they are. So they have taken. In the case of Canada, you know, he is so deliberate about this whole thing that he announces something in Parliament. Hmm. He sort of explodes this whole thing. He knows very well it's going to make you completely annoyed. Then recently you had that whole meeting with NSA, which was leaked to the Washington Post in its entirety and with God knows what other masalas added. In such a situation, if I was still in the National Security Council, I would not talk to this guy. Because I don't...
Yes.
What is he going to charge? What is he going to leak? He's completely unreliable. So he knows. He's playing on the fact that he's made you so mad that you're not going to give him any data. You're not going to help him. So he'll go back and say, oh, you know, India is doing nothing. That is not what the US is doing. So to that extent, where we can, we've always said that if we can, you know, we can sort of get things going between these. But let me make one thing clear. Hmm. Our relationship with Canada is different from our relationship with Trudeau. Please make that distinction. You know, we have a very good relationship. We've had a good relationship for years. Okay, there are these hiccups going on. You don't want that relationship spoiled. But this man is playing that game by saying, you know, playing on this word of allegations. Then he says, I have reports. Then I have something else and I have something else. So I would, right now, I would agree with what your first speaker said. We need to dial this down.
Okay.
Especially don't go for that bait, okay, which before, is constantly
before
thrown.
I bring in Ambassador Pinnock, I will go back to Terry. Terry, you know, there is a distinction being made here by Dr. Kartha that India's equation with Canada perhaps would have soured because of the reaction of the current Prime Minister. Do you think Prime Minister Trudeau has made the right assessment or has he really not made the assessment at all of the potential impact of the Khalistani separatism on the bilateral relations?
Well, he does seem to have an enormous blind spot, doesn't he, about the Khalistani menace. I mean, cast your minds back. I know a few Indians have forgotten it because it was such a fiasco. And I'm speaking of Justin Trudeau's visit to India in 2018, where he dressed up like a bridegroom and invited a convicted Khalistani terrorist. Okay, he personally didn't invite him, but his entourage didn't realize he invited a convicted Khalistani terrorist to a glittering diplomatic reception in New Delhi with the Prime Minister at the High Commission. Wouldn't look very good, would it? Well, duh, as the kids say. I mean, of course that was a diplomatic disaster. And this, yes, it totally colors what is happening now between the two countries. Hmm. Trudeau is not the right messenger because of these failures in the past. And I can remember doing a story once about a political campaign in South Vancouver, with all the Sasha's old writing, where the World Sikh Organization, a separatist organization, a separatist lobby group, if you will, was picking the liberal candidate that it preferred. So it picked a Khalistani-leaning candidate over a secular moderate in the mold of Jean Lesage. And for Justin Trudeau, this was fine. He didn't see anything wrong with that. And when I asked him about it, he said, oh, well, that's democracy. Well, that's exactly what it isn't. The party brass imposes upon the electorate, well, this is we don't care which candidate you're supporting, we're going to impose one. That's the opposite. So there's a long record incident like that, especially between which have made Indians rightly mad. Justin Trudeau madder than they are at Canada. They were already pretty mad.
Okay, we'll try and connect with Ambassador. Ambassador Chakravarti, thank you so much for your patience here. You know, we are trying to make that distinction clearly between the current Canadian Prime Minister and India-Canada bilateral relations. Do you think this frostiness is because of the reactions of Justin Trudeau? And how much of that has to do with his domestic political considerations and not as much as the backing that he has from the Five Eyes?
I think before I comment on your question, I should add that during the early 90s, from 90 to 95, I was heading I was the director of the AMS and the Canada division in the Ministry of External Affairs. And I dealt with Canadians, and I came away with a certain impression of how they, and the Americans also I dealt with. So, you know, somehow I feel that today we are seeing a repeat of their, you know, the way they deal with us.
Okay.
And Canada has lived up to that reputation that I saw and absorbed at that time. But let's not forget the history. I mean, I think Justin Trudeau has absorbed a lot of things from his father, who also took a certain position on these separatists and terrorists, etc. They were doing it for whatever reasons that they wanted, people to vote for them or whatever, as we call in India, vote bank, etc. But I am more concerned now about how to repair the relationship as a diplomat. And I'm not really happy with the way things have happened. There's no point in blaming Justin Trudeau. He may be doing it for whatever reasons. And we have just heard the comparison between how he has reacted and how the U.S. has reacted to a very similar situation. So I'm concerned about the fact that the Five Eyes or whatever, in India we call them the White Man's Club, by the way. Oh. And so the White Man's Club is now trying to browbeat a country, which was once a colony, of course, of one of the white men in that club. And so they think, I think Trudeau misjudged the whole situation. He thought that by mentioning it and that he would get the Indians down on their knees and say, you know, you are a white man, you are God for us, and we accept what you say without any reservation, and we will investigate and do all that. I think because he had no evidence. He kept on saying we have intelligence. But let us see what intelligence or evidence he comes out with in the trial, because that would be the crucial. Like the Americans have come out with some evidence and have placed it in court, by the way. Nothing of that sort has happened in the Canadian. So I don't know whether the Canadians were being put up to it by the Americans for their own reasons and they fell for it, or the Canadians thought this was for whatever has been discussed for domestic various reasons. And of course, this very high moralistic standard that you can't do this, whereas they can do anything they want all over the world.
So Ambassador Chakravarti,
there is a whole history of assassinations by the by 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 the Americans and others.
Yes.
So it is the kind of situation that in India we find very hypocritical. And this kind of double standard that we face all the time. I mean, yeah, geopolitics is full of double standards.
Yes, so since you've dealt with the Canadians...
Where will it actually go?
Yes, so since you've dealt with the Canadians and the Americans in the past, and you say this is a similar situation as to how it was in 1990s, then who began the process of repair? Who took the initiative of the process of repair? You know, who started dialing down?
Well, it does happen that we have a lot of things in common. We have merging interests in many areas. And when governments change, repair is done. I mean, take, for example, the 1998 nuclear blasts that we conducted, and which, of course, led to a lot of sanctions, etc. But then we did repair it, if you remember. Hmm. And who did the repair? It was the Clinton administration. I was there on the desk, and we dealt with all this. So I think a repair action is always possible, but it requires political will on both sides, and not to go into a megaphone mode of, you know, accusing another country of this thing or that thing. We can do that too. We can accuse the whole world of many things, particularly the Europeans and the Western world. But then we don't do that. We are not. But look, let us see. Let us not forget there is a long history of this, ever since the Kanishka bombing. Hmm. Which was so badly mishandled by the Canadians. It left such a bitter taste in the mouth of Indians that I think that remains at the back of our mind. But in between, other governments came and we clawed back and we sort of got back to track, etc. But now again, it's getting, you know, we have reached the sort of nadir of our relationship, which is a very sad day because I never expected this would happen.
So, but during those days, you had the Clinton administration step in. But here we have a situation, Michael Kugelman, where the Americans also have concerns with regards to Indian agencies' roles.
Right, absolutely. I mean, not to underplay or soft pedal just how concerned U.S. officials are about these allegations. I mean, this is serious business. And indeed, as has been noted, the U.S. and Canada have been working very closely on sharing intelligence in terms of the Canada case. And the latest Canadian allegations, which of course India has rejected, these are incredibly serious allegations. You know, we all know what they are. And you know, the U.S. has said that it takes them very seriously, which essentially means that it endorses them. So, yeah, I mean, this is things are pretty serious. But again, if you look at the U.S., India, Canada triangle, you know, I think it's very clear, as we all know, and as this has been discussed, the Indian relationship with Canada is so different than its relationship with the United States. And I think it's just much easier for the U.S. and India to work through these tensions than it'll be for India and Canada to work over these tensions. You've got a very multifaceted relationship between the U.S. and India. The relationship has been deepening exponentially for a number of years. And for all we talk about how the India-Canada relationship at one point had a lot to it, you know, as we know, mainly because of the Trudeau government and its activities and policies and positions toward the issue of Khalistan, you know, the India-Canada relationship, it's been on a downward trajectory for several years. So, you know, those U.S. officials that engage with India on some of the more sensitive aspects of the relationship, you know, intelligence sharing, tech transfers, that type of thing, I think it's those types of officials in Washington that have been most spooked, so to speak, by these allegations, just because they have to accept the fact that they're working very closely and sharing sensitive information with a country that, you know, according to the U.S., attempted a murder-for-hire action on U.S. soil. But it's not going to affect the trajectory of U.S.-India relations for all the strategic reasons that we're aware of, and just because you have so much cooperation on so many levels, from clean energy to climate change to higher education to trade, that there's enough insulation in the relationship to withstand the potential damage that could be inflicted on it because of the tensions over Khalistan. With Canada and India, you don't have that insulation in the relationship to protect it from this very serious crisis it's facing now.
Daniel, you know, the concern, of course, is what now? In terms of how murky the situation is and how contentious this issue has begun, become, and the bilateral tensions are continuing between the two countries. What now?
Honestly, I think what everyone's thinking is this all changes November 5th after the U.S. election. It completely depends. Is it President Kamala Harris? Is it President Donald Trump? They're both going to have probably pretty different views on this. I think Kamala would be much more likely to be highly antagonistic to the Modi government and back Trudeau for similar, you know, ideological reasons. I think Trump would be the opposite. And then you have, you know, Trudeau's perilous position. So for me, like, I just see Canada-U.S. relations would be put on a sort of Canada-India relations in some sort of cryostasis until Trudeau is gone. If Trump is in power, I don't really see – I see this just kind of languishing in the courts. And then, I mean, the ultimate – listen, when it comes to geopolitics, things matter more than one dead to Hardip Singhajjar, whether you think he's a human rights activist or a terrorist. And that, you know, taking 10 cents a liter off the gas pump is going to trump anything going on here. So if you have a conservative government in the U.S. and Canada for the first time in like 15 years, we can finally get the pipelines built that we've been trying to get built. That's always been either blocked by a Democrat or a Liberal party that we've agreed on, right? Then once the U.S. and Canada become one major energy thing, if you have Donald Trump in office, one of the main, you know, policy platforms is to sort of get an economic pipeline to India running through, you know, the Arab Gulf states that are our allies, right? The anti-radical ones, the UAE, Saudi Arabia. You hear like the Abraham Accords, that going through Israel to Europe too. And this is sort of the main economic goal of Western countries, if we're going to get down to it, right? It's the China One Belt, One Road Initiative, right? You want them to, Iran and Russia want to try and control global energy, whereas the free world wants to sort of make an alliance of allied countries to run our economics through, you know, bypass the more unstable ones. And listen, Canada and U.S. have tons and tons of energy. Under Trudeau, we shut it down, but we want to open it up. Countries that have tons of energy want to be able to sell their energy. What does India have? 1.5 billion people. What do they not have? Lots of resources. What do they want? Secure, cheap energy. If that's the possibility, it doesn't matter how many people, terrorists or this or that. If billions and trillions of dollars of energy and cheap and effective trade is on the table, all this stuff can go out the window and have a heartbeat.
Okay, let me give the last word to the woman on the panel. Dr. Tara Kartha, given the fact that the diplomats have been expelled, India has called back its own diplomat, the High Commissioner there, it looks like that, the heightened tension means that only we'll be waiting to see whether there'll be a regime change from Democrats to Republicans or continuity perhaps in America, and then things can change? Or do you think it'll be a new path, which will be a new trajectory on which India and Canada will have to embark on its own without a mediator?
In the case of the U.S., without a mediator. In the case of the U.S., see, they have, a very clear legal process that will go through, no matter Trump or whoever comes. That's going to go on. And you can expect a lot more details will come out. Right. So I think if we have the weight to go beyond this, as Daniel said, I mean, I've lost count of the number of joint working groups we have with the U.S. on multiple things. The issue is, like you said, how do we dial it down? And I agree, much of this has to go outside the public sphere. And that is what the U.S. and India have been doing. It is Canada, which is the problem. I mean, not Canada, Trudeau, which is a problem, because his position and his ability to survive depends on making as much of a noise as possible. And let's be very clear. The kind of things we saw in Canada, where they put out a thing saying diplomats, find out what is their addresses, you know, giving money to track them. That kind of thing which went on is unbelievable. It doesn't happen in any other country. And I'm sorry to say this. I know it might sound extreme. It doesn't even happen in Pakistan. You know, so there is a very genuine degree of anger. This is a democracy. You have to react to public discussions to an extent. But I would think right now what the Indian government should do is to put out the details of everything that we need. If they are dialing up in terms of data, let's also give the data.
Yes, you know, there has been AI-generated imagery which has been put out, a social media campaign which is ongoing. So it clearly looks like that there are multiple factors at play here. between the two countries. So thank you so much for joining us, Ambassador Chakravarti, Dr. Tara Karta, Michael Kugelman, Terry Milewski, and Daniel Broadman. We are now being joined by Ambassador Kanwal Sibal. Thank you so much, Ambassador. You know, of course, we are speaking about India-Canada relationship, which has become frosty. You know, there are multiple views about how there's no coincidence in diplomacy per se, and this has to do with him trying to divert attention from his own domestic troubles. And this is also coming at a time when he's also enjoying full backing of the Americans.
Well, actually, if you go back to when the problem started, it was when he made a visit to India a few years ago. And it was clear that he had not come for any serious discussions with the government of India. It was actually to ensure that the Sikh vote could be consolidated behind him. So his main purpose was to visit Punjab. And then, as you know, some problems happened at the reception that was organized in New Delhi. They invited a convicted terrorist, and things began to go downhill after that. That is one part. The other is that if you look at his father, Pierre Trudeau, he in fact depended a great deal and a tremendous soft corner for the Sikh lobby in Canada. In fact, he had opened the doors for Sikh migration in a big way. And when we were telling him about the terrorist activity that was going on, that Parmar was a terrorist and was planning something, as you know, eventually Parmar blew up the Air India plane, and Trudeau refused our request to extradite him. And even after the plane was blown up, they didn't arrest him. So there is a kind of a genetic political disorder that he suffers from when it comes to the minority Sikh extremist community. Now, added to that is the fact that when he won the election, he had a lot of support from the from Jagmeet Singh and his party. And Jagmeet Singh is now showing his colors very openly, how he is actually a promoter of Sikh terrorism. He's put the photograph of Parmar in his office. And I saw an interview that he gave to the Canadian TV. And he refused, absolutely refused, to accept that what he had done in putting up the poster of Parmar was wrong in any way. He totally avoided the question. He wouldn't answer the question despite prodding by the anchor as to, is this right what you're doing? Do you accept that it's wrong? He wouldn't answer that question. So he was dependent on Jagmeet Singh for support, for political support, because it was a minority government and needed their support to survive. And now, of course, Jagmeet Singh has withdrawn his support, but will give him issue-based support. So he's vulnerable. Now, he wants absolutely to win the elections. It is clear that he's behind the Conservatives in polls, at the moment 20%. But given his sense of entitlement, his mental makeup, and he wants to hang on to power. And therefore, he'll make whatever concession is necessary to the Sikh community.
Ambassador Sibal, one of the Canadian leaders, in fact, he's the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier, he has said that he has, in fact, accused Justin Trudeau of using this crisis to divert attention from other controversies. And he has also gone on to say that perhaps the time has come that posthumously Hardeep Nijjar's citizenship should be revoked because it would mean correction of an administrative error.
Yes, I saw that. I don't think that this will happen at all. there's no question. I mean, whatever little chance Trudeau has to remain in politics, much less win the next election, will be totally you know, would be out of the question totally if he were to go down this road of even revoking Niger's fraudulent grant of nationality. But that's not going to happen. This is polemics which are going on inside Canada between rival political factions or whatever it is. I don't think we should take that seriously, except to note that there are people in Canada who question Trudeau's version and his motivations, which is important going ahead. But insofar as diverting attention from some other issues and therefore raising the India issue forefront, yes, he's being questioned on China's interference in Canadian internal affairs and the fact that some of his MPs and all, they got support from China. So, and he's been very soft on that. In fact, I saw somewhere when he was confronted with the Chinese activities, he said that this is what all countries do. But when it comes to India, he's done, to my mind, a totally unforgivable thing, which is totally absurd, preposterous, that the kingpin of all this was our high commissioner in Canada. It's ridiculous. And if he seriously believes that, and if the RCMP actually believes this, then they're not worth their salt. It's a political organization. It is linked to the Khalistani extremist terrorists. It is not a serious investigative organization if they have come to this conclusion in any way. Now, with regard to intelligence and this and that, that they were gathering intelligence. Of course, they were gathering information. Now he's mixing up intelligence and information, making information look sinister. Of course, it's the job of the embassy, any embassy anywhere, to see who are the people hostile to it, who are negative, who have prejudices against India, who might be actually seeking ways to harm India's image, et cetera, et cetera. So you keep a tab on them. And so you have local resources and you try and find out who these people are so as to know what is happening on the ground. This is normal political work. You try and engage with all kinds of people. And then, of course, in this case, this information might have been relevant if you wanted to revoke the OIC cards of those people who are very active in seeking death for our High Commissioner and for our Prime Minister and burning his effigies and shoe-slapping his effigies, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, glorifying the assassination of Mrs. Gandhi. So the mission has to keep a tab on all this because there are dangers to our own security in India. And we have to know who these people are. There's nothing wrong with that. But he's making it sound as if they were gathering this information in order to give it to Lawrence Bushnoi so that he could go and kill these people.
Yes.
I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous, involving the High Commissioner and our diplomats in this.
All right. Ambassador Sybil, thank you so much for speaking to NDTV and sharing your thoughts here. You're putting out the entire show on ndtv.com. That's all from me on this edition of The Big Fight. I'll be seeing you next week. Thanks for watching.